Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This is an unusual podcast. A lot of you have heard about the Russia hoax at nauseam over and over and over again for the last few years. If you listen to my podcast, you may remember that we've had Lee Smith, the author of the great book, The Plot Against the President. What you probably don't know at this point is that somebody bought the rights to that book, and they produced a documentary. It's just out in the last couple weeks, and I'm excited to have on the producer of that documentary, Amanda Milius. Amanda, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking an interest, number one, in the Russia hoax, taking an interest in the plot against the president, but most importantly, being willing to come on and talk to my audience, because this will be something different. We haven't had on anybody talking about producing of documentaries before. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be with you, the great hero of the story. It was wonderful being able to work with you guys and with Lee and with everybody and your amazing team and the infamous Kash Patel who is I'm sure now enjoying slowly becoming a household name. It's wonderful to join you.
So Amanda, everybody listening to this podcast, they know the story of the plot against the president. But what they don't know is, how does somebody like yourself, young person, what first got you into, how did you learn the skills to even do this? Did you go to school to do this? And I should say at the outset, you have a very famous father who produced a lot of movies. I assume you grew up in that industry. But how did you come to produce documentaries, and what was your first experience in working in this industry?
Well, I worked in the industry in film or in visual arts in one way or another. I worked in the fashion industry for a long time when I was younger, and then I worked all kinds of angles of the film industry, producing, directing. I was an editor for years. I was a night editor at on a poker television show for a long time, which was, kind of a nutty experience. But I've done all odds and ends of careers in and out of the film industry. And then I went back to school. I went to USC Film School to go to grad school, their film program, USC School of Cinematic Arts, which is frankly, the best film school in the world. And I was lucky enough to be able to go there. My dad went there. My whole family is in one way or another gone to USC. And so that really shifted things when I went to school. Then I made a film to graduate, which is what everyone does. You make a short film to graduate and you see how it does. Mine happened to do really well. It was in, I think over 40 different film festivals, won a ton of awards. That one got purchased by PBS, which is great. And that was a big deal nobody sells their student film, which is pretty nice that happened. So I did that. I was touring around with that movie. And so I had a little bit of time off here and there. I wasn't working like a 9-to-5 job at the time, because I kept going for 3 weeks here, 3 weeks there. And so this was during 2015 into 2016. 2015, the election starts heating up. I'm conservative in LA, right? Like, my parents are very right wing. My parents are both on the board. I think my dad's on the board of the NRA, but my mom is like a champion shotgun shooter. She actually was the United States national champion for women at one point. So I grew up around this environment, even though we were in the middle of LA. My mom cruises around Bel Air with her NRA stickers on the car and her like Trump flag. So I think she gets a lot of attention. But anyway, so I was always in that environment, and the tension between politics and Hollywood just got so high in 2016, where it was no longer something where you could kind of accept each other and just acknowledge you had different points of view. It was absolutely impossible for me to ever talk about politics anywhere in LA. And so I ended up just kind of for fun and to just have an outlet, because politics was something I was obsessed with. I started volunteering for the Trump campaign in Nevada, which was the closest swing state. So I would drive out to Vegas, stay there for a few weeks, work on the campaign, go to a film festival, do film stuff, and then come back. And I just got sick of it. And I ended up getting hired by the campaign, stayed with them till the end. We won. Big surprise. And I mean, not to me, I knew we were going to win. But then I joined the administration and just, you know, showed up in D.C. in the middle of winter in an apartment I'd never seen and just never left. So I was working with a lot of the people that are, you know, in the movie. A lot of the supporting cast are friends of mine. I was following it really carefully. And when I believe a good friend of ours that's also a very good friend of Lee Smith's, said, you know, this manuscript before the book came out, before Plot Against the President came out, they were like, this is amazing. This is just such an interesting way of telling the story. This would make a great movie. Amanda, don't you make movies? Like, this could maybe work. And I was like, yeah, I used to make movies. But, you know, when you leave Hollywood for the Trump administration, you can pretty much be sure you'll never make a movie again. But I, as it turns out, I mean, when we first looked at the manuscript, I thought, absolutely, this has to be a movie. I didn't think I would direct it because I thought I'd never direct a movie again. I thought I'd kind of given that up. And I thought I would just produce it. But really, it was kind of a faded situation. I realized the only way it was going to get done in time and correctly and to be able to give the trust to the people who I was interviewing that no one else was going to touch it, that nobody was going to re-edit it and make everybody look stupid. I wasn't going to sell it to some company that's going to shelve it forever or, you know, turn it around and make a different story out of it. So I directed it, which I actually never thought I would direct a documentary. I usually do very sort of visually lush scripted things. And I think actually that worked. I think it's what makes it better than most political documentaries, if not all of them, is that it uses the tools of filmmaking.
Well, it's, you know, hour and a half long and it moves very, very quickly. Of course, you know, I'm interviewed in there, as I think, you know, many people can imagine that followed my podcast over the years. So take us back in time when you were a child. Did you go on the movie sets? Did you help your father at all? Did you do anything like that? I mean, is that how you got used to some of this?
I don't know that I helped him. I might have annoyed everybody on the set. And I know my mother would take me running around on sets. I mean, sets aren't really a place for children, especially on my dad's movies, because there's always something blowing up or somebody getting, there's like, it's not exactly where you, but as a young adult, my brothers and I, we would go to set, we would hang out. It was pretty fun. Unfortunately though, really, once I was old enough to really understand and learn from being on set, my dad was pretty much already retired, because he really got, you know, I don't want to feed into the whole thing of, oh, he was blacklisted, you know, blah, blah, blah. But as a conservative in Hollywood, after Red Dawn, which was like a hugely successful movie, which he wrote and directed, everybody loves Red Dawn. He really didn't make another large feature film again. And I don't really know. Nobody really knows why. I mean, there's a lot of ideas as to why, but it's he wrote Rome, which is a really great television show that a lot of people really love from HBO. Mm-hmm. But the politics in Hollywood just got really out of control at a certain point. And, he's also older. And so I didn't do a ton on set with him, but he did always advise me when I was going through film school, when I was writing, when I was basically doing everything. I mean, I can always run it by him. The thing is, with a guy like him, he's a lot more interested in politics than he is in any other kind of artsy-fartsy movie I might have done in the past. So he's he was more excited when I joined politics than anything in filmmaking.
And then you got lured back into filmmaking again. So when you sat down to first do this documentary, you kind of you lay it all out. How do you go? Because I think the amazing part about this film is the video and the sounds are just incredible. The team that you put together, it's not a very big team.
Yeah.
But man, they were you know, and I got to know them a little bit in the interviews that I did for the documentary. How did you, or are those people that you knew in the past that you had worked with? Is that how you put the team together?
Well, it's a little of both, because the thing that we realized with this film is that we were going to have to do it faster, cheaper, and smaller than it really needed to be. Like if we were just doing a documentary, we weren't in this political environment, we weren't on the kind of timeline we were on, we would have a massive crew and we would have all the time in the world. One thing that we did is we had to make sure that everybody, because we're in such a heightened political environment, that it's not that everybody had to be on the team, like exactly, like I don't vet people's politics when I hire them, but people that believed in the story, and everybody did. I mean, the team that we found, a handful of people are people I've worked with before in the past, on the first couple movies that I made, or, you know, folks from that I've worked with since then that are in and around DC. But really we got an amazing team of people who did the work of 50 people each, because they all believed in the story. And I mean, I've had people tell me, you know, it was an honor to work on the project because this is such an important American document to have on the record. I mean, that's another really big reason why we did this. It's, if you look into, if history judges this time period by the press, we're screwed, because what happened. And so this is going to live forever, and it'll tell the real story. And that's
right, because if you go back and Google right now, if you just came in from Jupiter and landed here today and you got on Google, which my audience knows you never Google, but if you did Google, you would Google and you would find that you would actually believe, wow, looks like Trump had something to do with Russia. Seems like they never tracked down whether or not Trump was with prostitutes in Moscow or not. Looks like the Steele dossier was, you know, could have been real. I mean, that's what somebody from Jupiter would believe.
You'd be tied to some yacht parties yourself. So,
That's right.
How great is that part?
Yeah. So there is a part in there that shows, you know, obviously the fake news attack me and my family and any company I've been involved in. You can watch the documentary if you want to know more about it. But the accusations of me are quite ridiculous. But
totally.
But the point is that, you know, I was glad to participate in something like this, just like when Lee Smith was doing his investigative reporting for both books, which both books are behind me. I knew it was critically important that I talk to a family of course. I knew I had to talk to somebody like you. There's other people that have done smaller documentaries on this, and I'm talking to them because for that person that, you know, 100 years from now, you know, the history has to be written the right way. And, you know, I think we continue to be concerned about whether or not there's going to be any prosecutions here. But
absolutely.
You know, that's one thing that comes up.
That's totally important. And even also, even in the moment we're in now, people who think that they follow the issue really closely, people who think that they're totally well-versed on the Russiagate thing, we get so many responses of people saying, I actually didn't know this, or I didn't know that, or having it all strung together actually in a 90-minute story is really important, because otherwise, who can track all of this stuff? I mean,
right. And you're not going to, well, you might believe this, but I actually learned a couple new things that I didn't know. Yeah, so there were a few things in there that I didn't know that had taken place at during the time period that I was like, oh, that's how that worked. I didn't know that had happened that way.
And
so let me bring you back to the, and I want to kind of finish up on this larger topic. Talked about how conservatives are being crushed in Hollywood. But one of the things that's developed over the years with Dinesh D'Souza and others who have now been putting these documentaries out, it's a lot easier, cheaper to do documentaries. There's more places to get the documentaries out. And we'll talk about the problem of getting this documentary out, which is another problem with our tech oligarch friends that aren't allowing, it's not as easy to find this documentary as it should be. But let's talk about maybe how do you view the future of of how conservative movies are going to be produced. And, you know, do you feel like we are at a point now where there's simply a why in the road where, you know, like I know with my children and my family, I'm like, look, here's going to be the approved route of things that we're going to watch as a family. And all this other stuff, you know, these are people that are leftist socialists, and I don't want you watching this garbage because it's got a political take on it that's indoctrinating. You know, it's indoctrinating our entire country and our entire population as a whole. So, do you see it that there definitely that there is now this other road that you decided to take to produce this documentary, where there's going to be more and more of this done?
Well, I think it's so two things. Definitely, because they are trying to crush us. I mean, first of all, one of the reasons why this was privately financed, I control every aspect of it. Nobody's going to come in, like I said, and do this re-editing or messing around with it or anything, is because we can't trust anybody in Hollywood to do this right. So a lot of times you get folks saying, okay, well, it's not available on every single platform, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, because if we had done a deal with some of these companies in the first place, it wouldn't be the documentary that you see. The other thing is that Hollywood's done this to themselves. It is going to be a why situation where we have our platforms, they have their platforms. And there's a good side and a bad side. The good side is that you don't have to live in Hollywood. You don't have to have anything to do with Hollywood. You can make movies from anywhere. The fact is, my company that I started to make this movie, but now is growing. We're making 3 or 4 other movies on the horizon. We've got an advertising set. I mean, people are dying for good quality, cool content that's friendly to the right, that's friendly to everybody, you know? Right. And so that's,
well, I would say it's not necessarily, we always get trapped in friendly to the right or it's conservative. It's actually telling the truth. And I've had so many of the journalists, the investigative journalists who have worked on the Russia hoax. And the first thing I do is always talk to them, and I'll say, look, I talked to you for like Chuck Ross, who worked Daily Caller. I have no idea what Chuck Ross's politics are. For all I know, he could be a left wing guy, but he did real investigative work. He told the truth. Yeah. He did real honest work. And you know, John Solomon and Sarah Carter and a lot of these people, I don't know where they are on the political spectrum because I never even had a conversation with them on their own personal politics.
And so I think
what you're doing here is not about, it's not, it's just about, look, I think people are desperate for real information that they know is factual, and it's people that aren't being manipulated by someone.
For entertainment's sake, wasn't Hollywood supposed to be the place that was rebellious and was cool? I mean, I don't know what's rebellious and cool about a corporate approved, Chinese government approved plotline. I don't think that has appeal to people, really. We've lost the American rebellious spirit in filmmaking. And I think my dad did that incredibly well. You know, people watch my dad's movies and they leave the theater shouting and excited. That's what I want to do. And Hollywood doesn't do that anymore. Hollywood has, you know, 10,000 reviewers deciding if the movie's allowed to come out, with all of these like bizarro identity politics versions of things where you've got, every story's redone with like an all female cast or some crap like that, which is like, you know, It's so fake and pushed on us that nobody enjoys it. So what I want to do is be able to actually just tell good stories, you know, truthful documentaries and just really good stories that are cool and edgy and fun. And I think that there's a really big market for that. And the great thing is I don't have to ever step foot back in California ever again to do it, because technology is such, I can do everything from where I'm happy, and I can move to the middle of nowhere and do it, which is great. But so that's the good side. The bad side, which is what we were talking about earlier, which is the catch up, is the platforms. So two things have to happen. We need more platforms that are free speech friendly, that are not, that don't have an agenda. There is absolutely no reason why Amazon should be holding up this film. It should have been live 4 or 5 days ago. They're giving us, they're not telling us no flat out, you know, because they don't want to do that because they think that we'll make a huge deal out of it, which we will. But they're saying, oh, this is under content review. We need an extended review. They're doing the same thing to Dinesh D'Souza. And conveniently, I'm going to be willing to bet that their content review will end on November 5th. Or something, you know what I mean? It'll be like, oh, okay, we found out there's nothing bad in this movie.
But the good news in the
like Cuties are available on Netflix, which is just, I mean, anyway. But so at least we have. Last thing I'll say on the platforms, it is out on Vimeo on demand. It looks gorgeous. It looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. Get it there. Always go to patpmovie.com. Watch it now. We'll always be updated with places people can see it. It's in theaters in a lot of different places in the U.S., and I'll talk about that in a second. But the other thing that I think people should note is there are two streaming subscription platforms, which is where we debuted the movie, and we did that on purpose because both of these platforms, My Movies Plus and specialproject.io, they are free speech friendly platforms for content creators. It'll never be taken down. It'll never be censored. And both of those platforms launched with our movie. So they're brand new. And that is also one of the ways we're going to have to combat this because like all the, you know, you get your bow tie conservatives saying, you know, it's the free market just because they're censoring you on one platform, just build your own internet. Okay. Right. Here's a movie platform. Go support it.
Right. Well, and that's the struggle that we've had with Facebook, Instagram, Google, and Twitter.
Our favorite, you know, Parler.
Well, I was just going to say that. Thankfully, there's Parler, but and nearly all of my listeners are on Parler now. And it's a great platform. It kind of combines everything. But as the users know, it's not as user-friendly as Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. But you have that... that good feeling is that you're not being censored. Like somebody's not throwing crap in your timeline. You're actually right. Just looking at your timeline as it was presented. And then you can go and click on somebody else and you're not going to be censored or banned or shadow banned or what have you.
Exactly.
So I want to make sure that we're going to put the website on the screen, but that is interesting. So that My Movies Plus,
My Movies Plus, and you have to, because both of these platforms launched with our movie, like we are their first product. They're all going to become big platforms. But at the moment, the way that you access it is from our Patip Movie, patpmovie.com. Watch it now. Click the links for My Movies Plus or for Special or for Vimeo on demand, but you click it there and that's the easiest way to access it because these are brand new platforms. I'm sure Google is hiding them in the algorithm or whatever, but right. It's the best way to get to them.
But Vimeo has been around a while, though.
Vimeo's been around forever, and you know, they've been cool. It went up right away with them, and you should be able to access it on all different, you know, your TV, your computer, your phone, et cetera. So it should be easily accessible that way. And more will be added every day. Every day we're going to add more platforms to the Watch It Now link and more theaters. So if you're willing to dart out to the theaters, which the cool thing we did with the theaters actually is we did not open in the coastal elite cities, right? Mm-hmm. We're going middle America first, okay? So we've got Utah, South Dakota, North Dakota, Ohio, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. You know, we're growing every single day. Oklahoma, Texas. We're gonna be all over real America.
Well, that's great because even if you were in the theaters here in my district, nobody could watch it because the theaters are closed. So it'd be playing with nobody watching it.
Yeah, we've been having a little bit of an issue with that. We're gonna have a big. We're not going to call it a premiere. I guess we'll call it a premiere party. But we're going to have it in D.C. because the theaters in D.C. are doing the same thing. And we think it'll be more fun to have all of our fans and folks that are in the movie come down and hang out with us. And we'll be announcing that very soon. I hope that you can come because you're going to get bombarded with autograph requests because now you're such a big movie star.
Well, that's because you made me into a movie star, Amanda. Thank you.
No, you for everything that you did. I mean, I think it's just good that you guys are getting the credit that you deserve. So many people didn't know, you know, that it was all because of you and your team, or else we would still be walking around and have no idea what happened. It's amazing.
Well, I'm just glad somebody was around to tell the story the right way, and I really appreciate that. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Of course.
When your next documentary is out, we're going to have you back on to talk about your next documentary. So give us a little preview. When are we talking, next year sometime?
I have never made a movie so fast in my life, and I think it might be the fastest documentary that was ever made. And so I keep telling, there was like several all-nighters many weeks in a row that I literally would say to myself, like, I'm never doing this again. This is crazy. I'm too old for this. But I'll probably do, the production company is making a lot of different films. Those are upcoming. I think the next thing I'll be doing is I'm going to co-author a book about China's influence in Hollywood, which is something I think is really, really important. And it's part of the reason why we can't get these stories out. And it's a really, really big issue. So they'll probably be, and it's personal for me. You know, I watched my dad, the end of his career. He wrote a movie called Genghis Khan that's really amazing. I mean, the script is probably the best that he's ever written. There's a lot of reasons why it didn't get made, but I watched a lot of really strange meetings go down with the Chinese government, and I have a really big axe to grind. So I'm ready to go.
Well, maybe we can bring that out of retirement and you can produce that movie.
maybe.
Can I have an extra in that? You know, can I just be like in the background? You know,
you're gonna play Genghis Khan because you're we're just gonna go. You know, we're gonna change up your typecast. You're not gonna play the congressman this time. Now you're gonna actually get on a horse and do it.
I'll ride a horse. All right.
Jack Langer and Cash can be the stupid tie. It'll be great.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to playing in your next movie. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on and for everything you've done for America. You're amazing.
Thanks a lot, Amanda. Good luck on the documentary. I hope everybody goes in and watches the documentary. You can download it today, and we'll have it on the screen. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all.
Trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept
left our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.